Decentraland Podcast with David Amoyama.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the CalcioLand podcast. I'm particularly excited today. This is kind of the beginning of a new era for the podcast. We are on a new platform to release the episodes. While CalcioLand will remain free to all, we want to make it available to new listeners. We have created some enhanced content for patrons, some articles, some enhanced podcasts of the show. So I really appreciate everyone's support. I'm going to make sure that you get great value for your money. But enough of that. I know you guys are here for the Calcio Talk. So up front, we're going to talk about a pretty wild weekend in Serie A with our great friend and co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. We're going to name our winners and losers of the weekend. We have a special guest, Sean Wright Phillips, former Premier League player, also played in MLS. His representative asked me to have him on the show, which was great. So that'll be before the Twitter questions. We did connect it a little bit to Serie A. Don't worry. I think you'll enjoy that interview. Then we have our superb Twitter questions from our listeners. And we're going to end the show with a dear friend of mine who recently returned to Twitter. Some of you who I've been on the platform for a while. Remember the great Steve Amoya, and I think you'll really enjoy that interview to close it out on the major storylines in Serie A. Before we get to that, let's chat with Alex Goldberg. So, Alex, I feel like our show, we kind of have some catchphrases, which some we've taken from other shows and have applied it to Calcio. We have the prisoner of the moment. We have the don't judge me on my worst day or even my best day. Try to have a more objective take. Don't just take the best or the worst. But I'm going to debut a new one since this is a new phase of the CalcioLand podcast. And this is kind of tied into prisoner of the moment. It just takes it a new level. So the new catchphrase, Alex, is when you and I have takes that we feel pretty passionately about, I'm going to start asking myself, are we just a two-game losing streak from sounding like idiots because we feel so passionately about this? And I've been thinking a lot about this with Milan because you became a Milan fan recently. I've been riding the Gattuso train for a while. I still think he deserves to come back next season, by the way. But there's no doubt about it. The two losses before the international break and right after it and the derby and then to Sampdoria, a really poor performance can really change things really quickly. So from now on, when I'm really passionate about someone, something, don't be afraid to say, hey, Dave, are we a two-game winning streak from sounding like idiots? And I'll do the same. So let me ask you, how do you feel about Milan right now? Lazio has one game to make up against Udinese. With a win, they'd be tied with them for fourth. So give me your state of Milan right now, and if you still think Gattuso should come back next season.
So let's work in the order you asked them in. I'm not too concerned for Milan right now. I'm really not. Now, we've talked about that derby loss to Inter. I said I was really impressed with the way they came back against Inter, and they showed a lot of fighting spirit, which they've showed all throughout their really good run of form. So that really didn't shake me a lot. Now, obviously, this weekend's loss, that was not good. That was a poor, poor performance from Milan. But, you know, if we really kind of take a step back and we think about this huge run of good form they've been on lately, wasn't this inevitable? Wasn't this a little bit inevitable? Now, I don't want to skew or curve results, but let's just pretend they come up with a draw against Inter. Then they really just have one bad performance in a whole group of great performances. And that, of course, is this weekend's loss to Sampdoria. So I feel like this was inevitable. Two-game losing streak you never want to have, especially as you said, David, when you are fighting to keep that Champions League spot, Lazio with the game in hand. However, still only reversely then 2 points behind Inter, as they obviously didn't do anything good. So, you know, now a loss to Udinese, that's their next game, David. A loss to Udinese and they're playing at home? Yeah, let's panic. Let's panic. And regarding Gattuso, I think he should come back next year. I do, but I said a few episodes ago, maybe a handful of episodes ago, when we were talking about Milan, it's not how you start. And Milan didn't start great. And they've been really good lately. In the whole middle of the chunk of the season, they've been great. But the saying is, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. So maybe
They start poor. They're good for a huge chunk of the middle of the season, but then they finish poor, and maybe he shouldn't come back. But right now, I definitely think he should come back. Now, will he? I obviously don't know that. I'm just a fan, but I do fear if they don't finish that well, David, and maybe they do lose out on that Champions League spot, they might look and say, well, we do appreciate what Gattuso did. He really did a marvelous job with Bakayoko and Paqueta and a handful of other players. However, could another manager get even more out of this new group of players? But right now, I'm not panicking, David, on Milan, not yet. And I do think Gattuso should be coming back. So that's my take. What about you?
So here's my take. And look, again, I'm going to be a stay on Gattuso's island. To me, he dealt with a lot of injuries, two ownership changes, the Higuain drama, integrated Piatek and Paqueta really well. So overall, I think he's done a really good job. Now, you know, the last two games were really poor. The derby in the first half was very bad against Sampdoria. I think that was even more concerning, although as we talk about on the podcast often, Sampdoria is a really good home team. But that's no excuse for Milan. If they want to make a Champions League spot, they have to at least be able to get a draw there. Gattuso wasn't helped by Donnarumma making a big mistake at the beginning of the match, but he also had plenty of time to turn things around, and Milan was just not impressive there. You mentioned, you know, they had a very good winning streak for a while. Now, they weren't playing great, but they were winning. And, you know, when you're at Juve, you're like, okay, you're winning with the bare minimum. You know, a great team can win even when they're not playing well. So you could chalk that up for that at Milan. Now, with Allegri at Juve, when they win 1-0 and do the bare minimum, you're like, okay, they have all this talent that they're not getting the most of. I think Milan, when I look at their squad, and there's a lot of people that disagree, I mean, are they better than Lazio? I'm not 100% sure. I think Milan has excellent players, Romagnoli, Donnarumma, you know, Piatek and Paqueta have been really, really good additions. But when I look at Lazio, I think Luis Alberto and Milinkovic-Savic, when they're on, those guys are real, real difference makers. And we saw that against Inter. I'm not so sure that Milan has quite those players. Like Romagnoli definitely is at his position, but can he really change a match the way those other two can at Lazio? So I still feel Milan's right where they need to be. So let's see what happens. You know, when it came to Gattuso, it was interesting that when I asked Paolo Condò about Gattuso, he was very diplomatic. He said that he really appreciates how sportivo he is, you know, how classy and takes responsibility for things. And he's a young coach that's going to make mistakes, that has grown. And, you know, when I asked him if he thought he should come back, he said, look, because of financial situations, Milan can't win and they need to improve young players. So it wasn't a ringing endorsement, but I could kind of see what he was saying. So I think it's really up to Gattuso what he does the next few weeks. I think, you know, it's still in their control, although Lazio, as I mentioned, one game behind with a win against Udinese at home, which looks quite feasible, will be right there. So it'll be a fascinating race for the Champions League spots. I think it will make up for having no Scudetto race. So Alex, I want to ask you, though, about one more thing before we move on. Serie A, you know, this season's been really exciting. When I look at the strikers and the capocannoniere race, it's really, really fascinating. And I like doing some research, like taking away the penalty kicks. What would the top of the standings for the capocannoniere look like? So if you take away penalties, you'd have Duvan Zapata with 18 goals, Piatek with 17 between Genoa and Milan, and Milik with 16. So Quagliarella and CR7 that are ahead of them without penalties would have 15 and 14 respectively. So I don't think anyone at the beginning of the season would have predicted this. Like, I was very high on Milik, so we can give him, but I don't think anyone expected this from Zapata and Piatek. So I'm going to ask you, Alex, based on the sample size, what you've seen, and I'm going to throw in Keane in the mix because of small sample size, but a lot of upside, not necessarily for Chelsea, but in general, if you could have one between Milik, Piatek, Duvan Zapata, or Morsi Keane, who would it be and why?
Now, David, before I fully dive in, you say it's not for Chelsea, but is it for one season, one game, or can I build a team?
Let's say one season, age matters to a certain extent, not huge. So let's just say next season.
Okay. All right, then that means my answer. Now, of course, if you had said, I'm building a team, I'm taking Moise Kean because he's really impressed me lately, only 19 years of age, and I really think he's going to be something special. But just for next season, I'll take age into consideration a little bit. So I won't choose Duvan Zapata because he's 28. But by the way, I'm not trying to discredit him. He has really surprised me this season. He's been awesome, like awesome to watch. 19 goals, 5 assists. But I got to go, and even though Malik is only 25 and he's been good, the injuries scare me. So if it's for next season, he still could go down with an injury, and then boom, I don't even have him for that season. I'm going with Piontek. I absolutely am. Now, I understand he hasn't been as great lately for Milan, but still, what he did at Genoa, now you and I weren't totally convinced we needed to see a little bit more, but I'm almost going to go back on my saying about it's not how you start, it's how you finish. On Piontek, it is how he started at Milan. With all eyes on him, he came out like an absolute gunman, and obviously the pun there is a celebration, but he was a badass. He really, really was. And it's not just that he had a great start with Milan, but he really does show you a lot of tools in his bag. He has that striker attitude I really like, just someone who's kind of ruthless. He's got I'm not taking a dig here. I'm taking a dig. Fine. I'm taking a dig at Morata. But he almost has the opposite attitude of a Morata, and I really do enjoy that. And him being 23, I feel like next season he could explode even more. Say he's at Milan next season, he's even more comfortable. I expect a big year out of Piontek, no matter who the manager is, whether it's Gattuso or someone else. So all are great shouts. All are great shouts. And it's a vast range of ages there, from Moise Kean to Zapata. But I would have to go with Piontek. But it's definitely a tough one. How about you, David?
It's close. And I'm with you. Kean, I think now I found out his name's pronounced Kane. So I think that's what it is. So in any event, yeah, he's been really impressive. I'm not someone who gets too high on young players. Out of the others, like, I think Duvan Zapata in the Premier League would be absolutely amazing. I think his body, the way he opens space, would be great. I think he'd be fantastic at Roma to replace Dzeko. But in a vacuum, if I can take one, I'm going to stick to Milik, who at the end of last season I had picked as the breakout player. This season in Serie A, he's done nothing to change my mind. The reason I give him a slight edge over the others, like, I like Piontek a lot, but I feel like he's a little bit like Icardi. He needs help. He needs the service. I think Duvan Zapata can do a little bit more for the team as far as opening up space. But I think what Milik has as the X factor is also his ability on free kicks and creating something out of nothing. That goal, his first goal against Roma, was fantastic. It was a nice setup, but with the flick that he had, he set it up. So with the free kicks, I am giving him a slight edge. But I think you couldn't go wrong with any of these. And I think just the fact that these guys have scored over 15 goals with no penalties, nobody really saw this coming, I guess, except for Milik at the start of the season, really bodes well for Serie A. You know, I remember at the start of the season when we were looking, trying to handicap who would win the race for the Capocannoniere, you know, Icardi, Higuain, even Dzeko were in the mix. And they've been replaced by this new breed, even Quagliarella being at the top, no one expected. So a really nice thing for Serie A. I think really anyone who listens to the podcast and all has to laugh at Serie A being called boring and defensive. And I think these guys' seasons really is proof of that.
All right, David. So it was a great weekend in Serie A. It really, really was. And as we do every Monday, we do our winners and losers segment. So without further ado, who are our winners and losers of episode 207 of the Calcio Land podcast?
Yep. So another weekend spread out over multiple days started on Friday when we had Cagliari traveling to Chievo. He didn't score, but Nicolò Barella had another unbelievable match. After the game, Cagliari's president Giulini was asked about Barella's future, and he says, look, it'd be great to keep him, but let's be realistic here. Really a breakout season for him. Terrific. We also had a goal by a very underrated midfielder on Cagliari's João Pedro, so they get a big win on the road against Chievo, even without Pavoletti, who was suspended. Then we had Moise Kean, who had his third goal in three matches off the bench for Juve. He kind of parted the seas of boredom. Boy, was that a boring match until he came on and gave Juve the lead. You kind of saw that coming the minute he would get on the pitch. And then we had Udinese, who had a big win against Genoa at home. They really needed in the race to avoid relegation. Manager Igor Tudor, the former Juve player, returned to manage the club. He had managed them at the end of last season, came back, winning his debut. And what a goal by Mandragora, the second one. Beautiful goal. So big winner for him, too. Now let's move on to the Sampdoria-Milan match. We talked a lot about Milan. Let's give some credit to Sampdoria. So not only did we have Mandragora with a great goal, we had Sampdoria keeper Audero with a really few nice saves. He's been excellent this season. There's been a lot of criticism of the prices for Mandragora and Audero. I think Audero has done more this season to live up to his price tag. Mandragora had that great goal. So that was kind of a plus valenza special by both of them there. We also had Sampdoria midfield, De Praet, really underrated, was excellent in that match. And defender Colley, we talked a lot about Anderson on the podcast, his other center back on Sampdoria, but Colley is a really nice player, very physical, very strong, another center back to watch. Sampdoria has done a great job with their manager, Gianpaolo, grooming these. Then we had Atalanta on Sunday, big win against Parma. We mentioned Duvan Zapata at the top, two goals. We had their keeper, Golini, who came in, who's replaced the starter earlier in this from earlier in the season. He's been quite good for them. Really a player to watch. Some Atalanta still in the race for Champions League spot. They're going to need Golini to keep playing that way. And Papu Gomez with another great performance. Atalanta just seems to do better when they're on the road. Then we had Spal and the race to avoid relegation. A lot changed this weekend. Huge win for Spal against Frosinone. They got a goal from defender Vicari. Really vital points. Not surprising that Spal started playing better once Lazzari came back. Then we had the draw between Fiorentina and Torino. Bad result for Torino because they really needed a win to stay in the Europa League race. We did have Baselli with a nice goal, and we had Simeone, who had another goal. He's been getting back on track after a dreadful first start to the season. Fiorentina really has a nice attack between Simeone, Muriel, Chiesa. They had Piaca at the start of the season. So Fiorentina is usually known for having a nice attack, and this squad fits into that. And then we had Napoli's huge win against Roma. So we mentioned Milik earlier, Fabian Ruiz with another great goal. We had Mertens, who had a very strong game, had a goal. He's now the fifth all-time goal scorer on Napoli. He tied at Vojak, a player from the past, and he's just one goal behind Cavani, who has 104. Another big win in the race to avoid relegation. This was Bologna against Sassuolo. Last-minute goal from Mattia Destro, who's been kind of an enigma this season, but really important. This win got Bologna past Empoli out of the last spot in the race to avoid relegation. And as we mentioned, the two Lazio stars, Luis Alberto and Milinkovic-Savic. Milinkovic-Savic finally scored against a top team. I've talked about it in previous weeks. The storyline is he's had a dreadful season. And the first half of the season, no doubt, but in 2019, Milinkovic-Savic has been nothing short of brilliant. And Luis Alberto, really a great performance at San Siro, was the man of the match. He's kind of like a younger version of Ilicic on Atalanta. Like when he's on, the guy just oozes class all the way. Looks like one of the most talented players in the league when he's on. And a big win for Lazio. They won the derby against Roma. Now they beat Milan. They had struggled against the top teams, and now they're right back in the race for a Champions League spot. So now let's talk about the losers. Mentioned the race to avoid relegation. Empoli, they lost to Juve, which is okay, but the fact that Spal and Bologna both won was very tough. To add insult to injury, by the time their manager Andrea Zoli was in the press room to do the post-match interview, there were no journalists left, and he joked, oh, Allegri must have already come by to do his post-interview. So insult to injury for Andrea Zoli, who had returned to Empoli's bench not that long ago. Then we mentioned at the top, Donnarumma, who, look, I feel has improved a lot with his feet overall this season, but that was a really bad mistake really cost Milan the match. Now, again, Gattuso deserves a pass somewhat, but he also had the rest of the match to turn it around and didn't make it happen. And then Parma, who have been a great story this season, and they still deserve to be remembered very well. But you look at their goal differential, it's really pretty poor. Now I think it's like over negative 20. They've been kind of a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Still great because they were never in the race to avoid relegation. But I'm not sure, you know, all the hype maybe is completely deserved, but good for them being in Serie A. But I'm going to make an early hot take. Let's see how they do next season, because I think they've caught a lot of lucky breaks and they deserved the good karma. But let's see what happens next season. Then we had Roma's dreadful performance. I feel like Di Francesco's a winner because now he's off the hook. Ranieri gave him that spark right at the beginning, but it's been disastrous ever since. The defense that Monchi left at Roma, I mean, going from Olsen to Alisson, I mean, remember how we used to say going from Sir Alex Ferguson to Moyes was the biggest drop-off? Like, I think going from Alisson to Olsen now takes that prize as the analogy. And then we had Zeko and Nzonzi, two of the highest-paid players on the team, who were absolutely dreadful in that match. And the last two losers, Chievo and Frosinone, who were already basically relegated, two home losses. They're totally done, but that was poor from them. So those are our winners and losers for the weekend. Now, before we get to the Twitter questions, we do have an interview with Sean Wright Phillips, former Chelsea, Manchester City player, and played for Red Bulls. His management team reached out to me to have him on the podcast, which is great. So we talked about his work with NBC, the coverage with the Premier League here in the United States, which is fantastic. He did mention an event that already took place in Boston, but if you're based in the U.S., they're going to do a lot more of these events. So I wanted you to get a sense of what those are all about, but I did sneak in a couple of Serie A questions, and I think you'll enjoy it. So here's Sean Wright Phillips. So for today's episode, we have a very special guest, a really nice surprise, a legend both of the Premier League, someone who also played in the United States and MLS as well. So I am thrilled to be joined by Sean Wright Phillips, who's joining us on Calcioland. So I would say in Italian, benvenuto, and it's a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me, man.
Okay, Sean. So I know you are working with NBC Premier League Morning. The coverage of the Premier League in the United States is outstanding. And since you've also played here in the United States after a very distinguished career in the Premier League, I want to simply ask you, you know, are you surprised by how much the Premier League's brand has grown in the United States? Or is this something that you kind of saw coming from your experience in both countries?
I am surprised actually, but I think a lot of the thanks obviously goes to the TV channels, but especially like NBC, because they're giving people access to see it a lot easier. And of course, like the other way, when I lived in England, for us to watch like MLS games, we'd have to wait up till sometimes three in the morning, which if you got work the next day or you got kids, for example, or you got training, it made it hard to watch. But whereas everything here now, I think I watch more Premier League games in America than I've ever been able to in England, which is amazing.
Yeah, I completely agree with you because, you know, I grew up in Italy. I cover Italian football here, and I find following the sport here is just much easier than when I'm in Italy trying to watch Serie A. So tell me, I just want to talk a little bit more about your involvement with Premier League Morning. Tell me a little bit what you've been doing covering the league. And again, what surprises you or stands out to you the most about the popularity of the league here in the United States?
For me, what the PL Morning's Life is doing is fantastic, because obviously it's bringing fans from different clubs together in one place to basically build an atmosphere that maybe in America has not really ever been seen. And the one in New York I heard had 2,500 people, and I'm hoping there's a good turnout here for the one in Boston, because I'm really looking forward to it. But the fan base is for the Premier League is growing quickly, which I think is also going to have an impact on the MLS.
Absolutely. I certainly agree with that. So let me ask you, speaking of MLS, so you were a very distinguished player in the Premier League. You played for England. You were on top teams in the Premier League. So let me ask you, before you came here to play in the United States, what was your perception of the league like, and how different did it actually turn out to be once you started playing here?
It's a bit different for me because obviously my brother was already here, so I had inside knowledge of what the standard and the players were like. But of course, when I came, it was a lot different to actually playing it than actually speak about it. I wouldn't say it's a lot quicker, but it's like fighting in a boxing ring with no defense. So it's basically like you punch, I punch, and it's like just back and forward. So there's one thing you definitely have to be here, as well as technically good. You have to be fit enough to keep up with the athleticism in America.
Absolutely. So let me ask you about Manchester City, a team that I identify you with when I think of your career in the Premier League. So they obviously have a great team now. So tell me a little bit about what your thoughts are of the team right now and the work Pep Guardiola has done at the club.
How do you explain that one? He's done an amazing job, and like, not that they wasn't before or have ever been, but there's just something about them now that is such a joy and a delight to watch. And on top of how well they're doing and how entertaining they're doing and being so good at getting crowds off their feet, they're actually giving an end product to it and winning medals and bringing trophies back to Manchester, which obviously adds to everything Pep is doing. And you can see that the players are playing with a smile on their face and enjoying life in Manchester, I suppose.
So since this is an Italian and Serie A based podcast, I have to ask you, there's a fairly good chance Manchester City and Juventus are going to square against each other in the Champions League semifinal. Do you feel pretty good about Manchester City's chances? Does Juve concern you? How do you see that potential matchup if it were to take place?
Juventus have been playing really, really well for a many number of years now. And it will be a tricky opponent to come up against, but I'm confident City will get through. It won't be easy, but I'm confident that they will get through based on their run of play and the confidence that they've built up over the last few months.
So the last question that I have, as you obviously have had a great career as a player, both in the Premier League here and MLS, and it's great to see you now working with NBC for the great coverage of the Premier League. But I have to ask you, who is your favorite Italian player ever and why?
Del Piero, I think I'd say. He obviously, growing up, my dad was a striker. Playing with my brother, he was a striker. And he was a guy that just loved to score goals. He always just seemed like he could, by the flick of a switch, score a goal or even create a goal. And for me, when I used to watch Serie A on a Sunday, He was just the person I enjoyed watching the most.
Great answer. I'm from his hometown, so you picked really well. So just let's close on this. Tell a little bit our listeners, you know, what they can expect with these Premier League's live morning, and tell me a little bit what's the thing that you've enjoyed the most about these events.
What you can look forward to is obviously there's a fan festival. The more it grows, you're going to see more and more players take part. Like tomorrow, as well as me, we have Leon Osman here and Tori Andre Flo, which everybody should have heard of as the well-known Premier League players. And it's a fun get-together, and it's nice to have people together. Like, apparently I'm taking part in a pancake competition. So, like, it's fun to do. And like I said, it's nice to have people together, and it's amazing that they're doing it in different states, which obviously takes a lot of work from NBC to do, and to get it all together and travel around like that is amazing.
So I can't thank you enough for doing this show. And I have to say, I am envious of the amazing coverage the Premier League has here in the United States. It's not just the coverage, also the fact that they have people like you interacting with the fans. So I really want to thank you for taking a few minutes for joining me today. And I wish you all the best with your new initiative.
Thank you very much.
All right. Great stuff there with Sean Wright. Phillips really enjoyed listening to that. So, David, what I also really enjoy, as do
our listeners, I know that for sure, and as do you, our Twitter questions, which we do every episode. Another great slate of questions. So let's start, shall we? And this comes from almost a regular contributor of the podcast, David. Our first question is from Prisoner of the Moment. And he asks, what will harm the following teams the most? Roma and their lack of defensive quality, Milan and the lack of experience at the coaching position, or Inter and their lack of sanity?
Prisoner of the Moment loves these questions. I love his Twitter name. That is fantastic. So let's kind of take them one by one. I mean, Roma's defense has absolutely killed them, because you look at the rest of the team, it's really quite good. Like, you could say that almost the midfield of the future, so many of the members of the midfield from the future are in Italy, between Zaniolo, Pellegrini, Cristante, who had a resurgence. Like, those could be like part of the nucleus. Dzeko's not had a good season, but Shaarawy has done well. They have some quality up front, but the defense is just absolutely dreadful. And I think that's going to take a while to fix, because with no Champions League, I think it's almost impossible that Manolas is going to stay, especially with that exit clause below 40 million euro, which on this market is an absolute, is a great deal. So that's going to take a while to fix. Milan, the lack of experience at coaching position. Like, Gattuso can either grow into the role, or if he doesn't make a Champions League spot, odds are he won't be back. So they can fix that. I see that as more easy. Inter, on the other hand, the lack of sanity, the Pazza Inter, that has really been a staple at the club for a while. And, you know, I really thought the way Marotta handled the Icardi thing, and even Nainggolan, how they suspended him, I really felt like Inter was trying to take a page out of the Juve, be all about business. But then Spalletti really threw a torch flame on that and got it really going again. So we got a full-fledged Pazza Inter moment there. So I'm going to say probably the easiest to fix is Milan. Maybe if Spalletti goes and they get someone that buys into, you know, Inter being more business-oriented and less dramatic, then everyone can be on the same page, but they'd have to also get rid of Icardi and Wanda. The Roma defense, though, is going to be rough, because especially with Manolas leaving, they would have to rebuild that entire unit. So I'm going to say Roma definitely did the most harm in the short term, and that might be the hardest one to fix.
Another great question from Prisoner of the Moment. Truly, truly was. All right, David. Next question. And boy, this was quite the big talking point yesterday on football Twitter. Do you agree with Spalletti's decision not to select Mauro Icardi?
You're right. It was a big topic on football Twitter. It made me really glad that we have the podcast and I'll be able to write more posts on the Patreon page, because people get really, really emotional on this. So I was kind of glad to sit this one out and kind of collect my thoughts on this. So for those who didn't really follow the situation, let's recap. Icardi returned to practice during the international break. All the players, Brozovic, Perisic, the one we were concerned with, all returned. Lautaro Martinez was hurt. It almost all looked lined up perfectly for Icardi to kind of maybe play a little bit in the match against Lazio, potentially be the savior. Icardi supposedly, reportedly, Spalletti asked Icardi if he wanted to say anything to the rest of his teammates, and Icardi declined, saying, you know what, we already worked this out for the club. I don't owe you guys anything else. So then Spalletti on Saturday decides not to select Icardi for the match against Lazio. And then after the game, had a really exciting press conference where he said, look, Icardi was at Inter for 6 years. We didn't make the Champions League. Most of the time that he was here, we won games with or without him. And he goes, for me, the idea that we had to mediate his return to the club is embarrassing. I owe it to the players to do what's right. And he goes, you could ask any Inter fan what they think about the situation, and you'll see what they say. And then he threw in, to find an Inter fan, you would have to look outside the club, which I think was a shot at Marotta coming from Juve. So let's give it to Spalletti. I almost felt like he was paying tribute to the prodigy singer at the funeral. He really was the fire restarter on this one with that. So, look, on the surface, do I think Spalletti was right in principle asking Icardi to speak to the team, then not bringing him back because of everything that happened, and then saying, look, we didn't make the Champions League with Icardi. We've won or lost without him. Yeah, it's hard to argue that. But there's a difference between being right and being correct. Spalletti is also an employee at Inter, and they have to do everything to get back in the Champions League. So I think the timing and making this public maybe wasn't for the best. You have to do what's best for the club. And in Italy, you say the panni sporchi si lavano in casa, the dirty laundry you do in-house. You know, could he have just selected Icardi and not played him at all against Lazio? Could he at the press conference just said scelta tecnica, he didn't play because of a sporting decision? Yeah, that would have been better for Inter. So I think he was right, but he wasn't correct in the timing and in the way he went about it.
All right, David, how about this? This does tie in to the previous question. Do you think Lautaro Martinez has a chance to secure a spot on Argentina's national team now that Gonzalo Higuain has retired from international football?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I just don't know how much Higuain's a factor in all this. I think regardless, I think we've seen from Lautaro Martinez a very different player than Icardi. You know, he's much more mobile, much more involved with the run of play. Like, look, I am no expert on the Argentinian national team. I'm no huge expert of which one has worked well with Messi and who hasn't on the team. But when I look at Lautaro Martinez and the way he plays, he strikes me as someone that could really translate well in a lot of different formations. A lot of different situations. I think with Icardi, you really have, you know, one style and it is what it is. So, yeah, and I got to say for Icardi, add insult to injury, that Lautaro Martinez does well with the Argentinian national team, somewhere that Icardi has always struggled to even find a role. So, yeah, definitely an interesting situation. So long and short of it, yeah, I do think he has a chance, although I'm no expert on the team, but I don't think Higuain is much of a factor in it.
All right. Next Twitter question comes from Derek Favretto, and he asks, how many years will it realistically take Milan to contend for the Scudetto again?
So Derek is one of our patrons. Thank you for all your support. He asked me this on our patron page before the Sampdoria match, and I said for the Scudetto, 2 years. He also asked me to be, you know, like a quarter finalist in the Champions League, and I said that's more like 3-4 years. I mean, I'm not going to overreact to that match against Sampdoria. I mean, I always ask myself, and you guys know, you know, how long is it going to take for Milan to contend for Juve? Well, we'd have to look at the players. How many of the players on Milan could realistically start for Juve? Until we get into saying at least 4, 5, 6, I don't think it's realistic for them to be a Scudetto contender, because it's not so much are you improving yourself, is are you bridging the gap with the teams in front of you? So I think Milan's done nice work bridging the gap with the Roma, the Napolis of the world, and even Inter. But I still think there's a long ways to go again for to catch up to Juve. So let's say Scudetto 3 years. But, you know, you also, I mean, look at Napoli. They came so close last year, but they had been building for a while. So I think 3 years, and that might be pretty optimistic.
All right. Next question's on Roma. Ooh, right to the point here, David. Is this the worst Roma side in many years?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is maybe the worst Roma that we've seen under President Pallotta. I mean, they had beaten their points record once under Rudy Garcia, then under Spalletti. Last season, they finished in the top four, made a Champions League semifinal. Those were definitely really good years. There's just a huge drop-off in talent. Like, look, you know, this time last year, I was advocating for Roma just blowing it up. Like, sell all the old players, just start fresh. And in a lot of ways, they kind of did that, but they didn't go all in on it. Again, we mentioned at the top, I think the defense just really inexcusable. I think you look at maybe the other parts of the pitch, what they did in the midfield, like flipping Strootman and Nainggolan for Cristante, Zaniolo, and giving more space to Pellegrini. That made perfect sense. Had they done, you know, something similar for the defense, that would have been a good strategy. So I agreed with the strategy, not the execution. I think Schick, although he had a slight resurgence at the beginning of 2019, has been a massive bust. I mean, it's really to the point where, you know, other than Zaniolo and Manolas, the most valuable employee at Roma are our friends that are the admins of the Roma English. That's their biggest asset right now. So, yeah, I feel bad because you guys know that I have, you know, I really like the guys that run the social media team. Palottas from Boston, I think he's done a lot of good things, invested a lot of money. But the Monchi hire, which on paper would have made a lot of sense for what Roma was trying to do, that really set them back for a while. And this has to be the worst Roma team that I can remember in quite some time.
All right, David, interesting question here. Should Juve consider selling Pjanic?
So I know the reaction right away. I can hear like 15 of you or even more just yelling, no, no, what are you talking about? Juve's already not good in the midfield, and he's one, if not the only good ones they have. And I agree with that. I'm not a big Pjanic guy, as you guys know. I've been saying it for quite some time. But, you know, it's kind of like, to me, Pjanic, when he was taking the free kicks, which he's absolutely amazing at, I think that it was masking a lot of the other issues in his game. He always was inconsistent, tended to disappear in the big ones. And I think now that he doesn't have the free kicks to kind of bail him out, I think a lot more people are seeing his limitations. He is 29. He is going to be 29. He is one of the highest earners on Juve. And I don't think, you know, him and Dybala, in some ways, I know they don't play the same role. It almost doesn't seem like they can fit together in the formation. It's really hard to get them both on the pitch at the same time. So when I consider everything, and he still has a huge market, and my friend Fabrizio Romano linked him to Real Madrid, saying they met with his agent Ramadani, and that Pjanic is open to an experience in another league, and Juve is open to selling him for a huge offer, I would at least look into that. I know Juve already has Ramsey coming in. Emre Can's been playing better recently. You know, it goes back to what I say, easy to fire the coach. Can you get someone better? I mean, if Juve brings in, say, Isco, who they've been linked to, although now with Zidane back, maybe that's less likely. Or let's say they make a push for Milinkovic-Savic or someone like that. If you told me Juve is getting another stud midfielder on top of Ramsey, and they would make a big profit on Pjanic, because they would, they signed them for cheap deal. They've amortized most of it. They sold them for over 80 million. It would be a massive profit. On top of the profit, you also shed a huge salary. Or say you get the young midfielder from Lyon, and Dombele, I think is his name, who would be cheaper wages-wise. I would consider, I know there's a lot of Juve fans that would that are horrified by this idea, but when I look at the finances, his age, his performance, I wouldn't exclude it at all. I actually think, you know, if Moggi was still running Juve, who was all about changing things before it was necessary, he would move Pjanic. And cover your ears, Alex, or maybe get excited, Alex. The other player that I would sell this summer is Alexandro. That's who really I would look to raise some money to keep the players that they have and improve the midfield.
Oh, you know, I'm still obsessed with Alexandro just for the simple fact of who Chelsea's left back is. There we go.
One of the two.
And by the way, the other one still needs justice after yesterday. So, oh boy. All right, David. Next Twitter question, and this is an interesting one. Do you think Bernardeschi is living up to the Fiorentina hype? Would you rather have the version we saw of him at Fiorentina or the one at Juve?
So I like this question because this guy wasn't a prisoner of the moment after the Atletico Madrid match, because Bernardeschi has had some brilliant moments for Juve. So simply answering the question, where I rather have the version at Fiorentina or the one at Juve, I'm going to say I didn't like Bernardeschi's first season at Juve, but I think he's been great with Cristiano Ronaldo. For some reason, of all the players on the squad, and Moise Kean has really gotten a lot out of playing with Ronaldo as well, Bernardeschi really improved a ton. So I'm going to say this season's version, he just really fits perfectly with CR7. I liked Bernardeschi at Fiorentina. I wasn't crazy about him. When Juve got him for 40 million, I was like, okay. Juve maybe should have just bought Chiesa, just wait a little bit and get that guy. But I got to say, Bernardeschi has impressed me at Juve. Really a player to watch. I'm intrigued by him. I think he's pretty versatile. So I'm going to say I've enjoyed his version at Juve, but this season, not the one we saw the year before.
All right, David, last Twitter question. Let's move away from football. What was your take on the movie Us?
Okay, so guys, this movie's been out 2 weekends. I'm really not going to spoil it. I'm not, but I'm going to talk a little bit about it. So simply put, you guys know this is Us is the movie by Jordan Peele. Get Out, probably my favorite movie from the past 3 years. Roma, definitely up there. Amazing. Get Out, I could rewatch anytime and pick up something new and just enjoy everything about it. So I went to see Us, who by the trailer looked like a straight up horror movie. I'm not a big horror guy, but I loved Get Out so much that I was going to go opening weekend no matter what. So it was fairly scary, maybe not as scary as I thought it would be. So my take on Us is that I enjoyed thinking about it, and I've been thinking a lot about it, much more than watching it in the moment in the theater. I had to listen to some podcasts and read a little bit to understand a lot of what was in Us. So I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed thinking about it. And just like Get Out, I think I'm going to enjoy it a lot more as a rewatch. I think Jordan Peele really is now the master of these rewatchable movies because he throws in a lot of Easter eggs, a lot of symbolism, the type of stuff that I'm really into. I think the money shot of the movie, and I still don't know what it really means, is when this frisbee lands on this beach towel exactly over a circle. I think that's really the metaphor of the movie, although I still don't know exactly what that means. So I enjoyed it. I would recommend it. I'm going to watch it again. I will say I thought the performances were incredible. Lupita Nyong'o, who was in The 12 Years a Slave, was incredible in this. She plays two roles, and she's part of the twist in the movie. She was terrific. I can't believe she never was really the featured lead actress in a movie until now. Her husband in the movie, Winston Duke, brought the comic relief. So I really enjoyed it. To tease, I am going to interview Brian Hyatt of Rolling Stone, who interviewed Jordan Peele. So we will talk a little bit more about this movie in a future episode. So if you haven't seen it yet, I recommend you watch it. So thanks as always for the questions. Send them for the next podcast using the Calcio Land hashtag. And we're going to close the podcast with some straight up Calcio talk with our dear friend, Steve Amoya. Longtime friend of the show, been off Twitter for a while, so it was great to have him. So enjoy. And I'm very excited to welcome the next guest because not only is he a superb creator of content, someone we've had on Culture Land a while back, but he's also a dear friend, someone I've had the pleasure of knowing for quite some time. And this is my good friend who you guys know on Twitter as Steve Amoya, but I know him as Stefano. Those that have been on Twitter for a while are very familiar with his excellent website, worldfootballcommentaries.com, where Steve writes a lot of reviews of books, does translations, is just really a connoisseur of world football and a complete class act. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Azzurri, things going on in Calcio, but also on some of the exciting things that Steve is working on. So Steve, it's a real pleasure to welcome you back to Calcio Land. Benvenuto.
Thank you, Dave. It's always a great pleasure to be with you. Thank you for the very kind introduction.
So, Steve, let me take you back to the last time I had you on. It was a very dark period for the Azzurri. It was right around, I think it was right after the playoffs against Sweden or right before it. You know, the Ventura era, we don't need to go over it again. Really one of the darkest periods of the Italian national team in my lifetime and in the history of the Azzurri. But so far, Mancini has gotten off to a very good start in a lot of different ways. So I want to ask you, as someone who has followed the Italian national team for a long time, what has stood out to you the most about Mancini's tenure with the team so far?
What stood out initially, Dave, was his flexibility, desire to impose a style of play, along with the declaration that I want to bring Italy back to where it belongs in world football. The latter was an important statement of intent that needed to be heard when he first took over the helm last year. Mancini wants to create chances, control play, and be more attack-minded. It seems to me he clearly wants players who will implement his philosophy. He also wants to create a united group, regardless of age, that will play for each other. As he said the other day on Italian network Rai, my team will unite generations. He's given many young players their first senior call-ups, and in many cases, some who have not had much Serie A experience. If we include last night, David, 18 players have made their Azzurri debuts since Mancini took over, which is an impressive figure. He also does not appear to underestimate rivals, as we saw with his predecessor. In 11 games, he's only lost twice now to France and Portugal, respectively. And last night was their fifth game on the trot, keeping a clean sheet, which had not occurred since 2005 with Marcello Lippi. Also, David, Mancini's not been afraid to make controversial selections and to blend youth with the senators, the veteran group, for example, Keane, Barella, Sensi, Spinazzola, Zainolo, as part of the younger contingent, and the great story of Fabio Quagliarella as an example in the other direction. It seems to me he wants the team to have a clear identity. I felt the inclusion of Quagliarella was an important message of inclusion. As Mancini said, he's not a token for us. He deserved to be called up. How could I not call him up, being the leading scorer in our league? And as Fabio said, I'm not here as an award. And in addition to Bonucci and Chiellini, they bring vast international experience. I also believe that Verratti will flourish under Mancini's guidance. David, Mancini learned a lot from a great maestro of calcio, Enzo Berzot, who gained his first cap in 1984 at the young age of 19. Versus Canada in a friendly. And I think being capped that young may have given him a special appreciation for the demands and pressures that up-and-coming talents will face at the national team level, such as a Moise Kean. I think given his own Azzurri career, he had 36 caps and 4 goals, may not have been as stellar as the type of caliber player he was at the club level with Sampdoria, Lazio, Leicester City, end of his career. Seems to have a lot of faith in a player such as Ciro Immobile, who's not always shine in blue as he has at club level.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Mancini came on the Azzurri with Berzot. He then had a rather difficult relationship with the managers after that, and I feel like he's come full circle by now becoming the manager himself. Yeah. So you mentioned a lot of positive things going on the Azzurri. I think a lot of them, I could see why they give you hope. Is there anything like specifically that you can pinpoint, maybe of the things you mentioned or anything else that stands out to you? And then one reason still that you would have for concern for the Azzurri?
I think what gives me the most hope is their collective group spirit and a more offensive type of mentality with a clear intent to dominate and own the play, so to speak. And also, it seems to be a firm desire to place the failure to qualify for the World Cup 2018 in a distant rearview mirror. My biggest concern, David, would be the lack of consistency in scoring if we discount the result versus Liechtenstein last night. I mean, up until Fabio Quagliarella's brace, the last 18 goals have been scored by 18 different players. So I think last night was kind of a statistical anomaly, and because the last time they scored 6 was in 1993 with Sacchi. But I think, David, the team overall needs to show a more clinical finishing ability against higher quality opponents. And we'll get a glimpse of that when they face Greece and Bosnia in future Euro qualifiers.
Absolutely. So now I wanted to ask you about a manager who recently turned 80, which in and of itself, I have to say, was really kind of shocking because he's been such a huge part of my life as a calcio fan. And this is Giovanni Trapattoni, and someone I know you're very familiar with because you followed his career at Juve, at the other clubs, on the Azzurri. So very simply, when I say the words Giovanni Trapattoni, what comes to mind to you first thing?
First thing that comes to mind to me is non dire gatto. That's don't say cat. That was the name of his autobiography. And if I may share a personal remembrance before perhaps responding a little bit in more detail in an important way. In 1983, when I was much younger, Juventus came here to Washington, D.C. to play a friendly against what was called Team America. So I went down to this place near the White House, was called the old Executive Office Building, because they were meeting then Vice President George Bush, who was a friend of the Agnellis, and he was meeting the team. Well, the bus pulls up, and off of it comes, the first thing was Gordon, Gordon, and Trapp was yelling out to Gordon Bradley, a very famous English soccer coach who managed the Cosmos, and then the Diplomats here in Washington, and also was in the college game. Apparently, he was your liaison of the trip. And then the whole team was wearing Juve blazers, and they get off the bus, with the exception of one. Platini was wearing the chartreuse green type of outfit, and they all walked by me. Gaetano Scherea, Paolo Rossi was holding a ball, autographed ball, Tardelli, Cabrini, and then a very imposing figure, Claudio Gentile, walked by me, and in person, he's really a scary-looking guy. But to me, David Trapp, he's the history of calcio. He's a monument to the world game, given his success not only in Italy, but Austria, Germany, Portugal. And for me, he's the agony and ecstasy of calcio encapsulated in one wonderful man. I mean, such a passionate personality, and throwing the holy water on the touch lines before games to negate negativity, and his famous whistles to players, his epic humor, and obviously his temper as well, are all part of the couch of lure. And I think we'll never see someone such as he again.
You took me down memory lane with that answer. I mean, obviously I don't have the personal anecdote you have, but yeah, his quotes, I had forgotten about the holy water. So that was a nice touch. And yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, he was robbed in a lot of ways in 2002. We know what happened in Korea. Really, the opportunity of really solidifying himself as maybe the best Italian manager ever. That's really the only thing he was lacking, was that. And we all know what happened in Korea. So let me add with against Korea in the World Cup. So I want to ask you a little bit about Serie A, because we haven't caught up on this in a while. So I kind of picked three big storylines that I want to get your take on, because you know the league really well, but you have a worldly perspective on things. So I'm curious to see what you think. So let's start with Ronaldo. So he's had his first season in Serie A. We saw Atletico Madrid, the type of impact that he can have. So very simply, what has stood out to you the most so far about Ronaldo's first 8-9 months on Juve?
For me, David, it's his winning mentality, leadership, and attention to the smallest levels of details that are quite discernible from afar. It seems he wants to win every game, every challenge against a rival, every trophy at his disposal now at Juventus. And his commitment for constant self-improvement, will to win, ability to handle immense pressure, and he seems to really to welcome it. I think he has also an infectious quality that's ameliorated Juve in significant ways, in my opinion. For example, the daily example in younger players such as Ken, Bernardeschi, Spinazzola, it not only helps Juve, but the Italian national team as well, as we've seen recently. And as Ken Moise said a few days ago, seeing CR7 every day makes you grow up. I learned so much from him. He's just a top player. And I remember a quote from Ancelotti when Carlo was at Madrid saying, players such as he don't need coaching. They don't have to be told anything. And he said that's the difference between a top player and one who thinks he's one.
So let me ask you, I think people already gathered from your previous answers so far that you really have a strong sense of history of the Italian national team and Juve. And you know what's really interesting about Ronaldo is Juve's had a lot of Ballon d'Or winners. I think players that took the next level at Juve. Yeah. I don't know if they've quite acquired one when the moment was the best player in the, you know, in the conversation for the best player in the world, one or two, whichever way you want to rank them. So let me ask you from a historical perspective, you know, obviously this is only one season, but thinking more of his ability and his impact, where do you kind of rank him or see him in the pantheon of the really great players that Juve has had in their history?
Well, there's been so many such great ones. I mean, when I was young, I was fortunate to see Bettega, Calcio, Forino, Michel Platini, Rossi, Scherea, the great defender, Tardelli, Zoff, and obviously in recent times, Buffon, Alex Del Piero, Nedved, Roberto Baggio, Zidane. I think, David, in terms of ranking, for him, that Mr. Agnelli didn't bring him to Juve to win another Scudetto. That in order to enter up the pantheon of Juve greats, you don't have to deliver the Champions League fairly or unfairly. And I think that will be the barometer of his time there. And obviously it's significant pressure. He seems to be the type that wants it and welcomes it. And I feel he didn't leave Real Madrid without a mission. And I think he's found one in Turin. And we'll see if he recovers in time for the next knockout round against Ajax. And obviously, if he's able to bring back Champions League glory to Juve for the first time since 1996.
Yeah. Interesting that you said, obviously, he's going to be judged on the Champions League. And I felt, you know, in a way, acquiring a player like Higuain, like that already won so much in Serie A, that it was really, are you going to be able to move the needle in the Champions League? And I think what you said, fair or unfair in the case of Higuain, I think that's certainly an appropriate thing to say. I feel like with Ronaldo, everyone knows that's what it is. And Juve, who historically, even from the president on, who never talk about Champions League, it's all about Scudetto, and what happens in the Champions League is a bonus. Like, he really changed that. So definitely very exciting. So speaking of exciting, maybe in a completely different way, we have the Mauro Icardi situation. Now, you and I, you know, we social media, the internet, you know, started becoming part of our lives. You know, for a lot of our listeners, that's always pretty much been part of their lives. Not for us. So I got to ask you, what's your take of the whole Icardi situation? And have you ever seen anything quite like this? Not necessarily in culture, really could be anything other sports or life in general.
Well, I not really. I mean, I was thinking the only thing in culture that's somewhat similar to this reality show was when 80,000 people showed up at the São Paulo and Napoli when Diego Maradona arrived in a helicopter in 1984. But jokes aside, no, nothing quite like this. And it seems to be somewhat of a reality show, especially how it's played out in a public rather than a private arena. It might point to a younger generation's penchant to communicate via social media, as you just were mentioning, instead of behind closed doors, or in this case, the power of certain influential people, namely Icardi and his wife agent Wanda Nara, to create their own messages to vast social networks. I was listening a few weeks ago when you and Alex were discussing this in detail, and I can't really add a lot much more because you made great points, but I do have some thoughts on it. First, the captaincy is not a right, it's a privilege. And that point has not been discussed too often in the media during this situation. I know Mr. Marazzi, the former president of Inter, he came out backing Icardi publicly. But David, overall, I think Inter, the management, has handled this situation properly. You can't allow a player and or his agent to become bigger than the club. Unless perhaps your name is Lionel Andres Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo dos Santos Aveiro. I think Icardi's allowed his Asian wife, Wanda, to dictate the terms too much. And this is one of the biggest clubs in the world. She drew a line in the sand over the captaincy, which I believe was a mask for the real intent, a contract renewal. And she then started discussing private matters, perhaps things in the dressing room, which, as we know, David, whether in Italy and other places, that's a sacred area. It's, you need to exercise omerta, silence. And I think she may have underestimated some of the words she was saying, but also underestimated the response of Inter. Now, David, as an agent, it's her job to maximize her husband's, her client's earning potential, and there's nothing wrong with that. And Mauro's got to produce, play, honor his contractual obligations for the club. But as you mentioned in the past, she's a TV personality. She's got a huge social media following. And it seems to me she wanted to be the protagonist in this story, not her client husband. We can argue if Raiola got involved, a famous agent, being a man, being someone with more credibility, gravitas in world football, that it would be different. Scrutiny level, et cetera, but who knows, David, maybe not at all. But I do think that Internazionale, they made the right choice in terms of the armband. And Beppe Marotta, the new director, Zanetti, the vice president, and a young club president, Steven Zahn, who's new to all this himself. to send a notice to the current roster along with players that come in the future that, you know, this is the team, and as I mentioned, no players above the team. You know, I guess I'm a little old-fashioned, David, that to me, you shouldn't do business with family and friends. And it's one thing to sack or change your agent. It's quite another to divorce yourself from an agent who happens to be your wife, your partner, your significant other. And he's such a rare talent. I mean, you defined him in one of your podcast as a old-style center forward, and he really is. And as Alex said, you know, he'll score regardless of his mood. He reminds me, David, of something Johan Cruyff used to say. You have the ball for 3 minutes, but what you do in the other 87 is equally important, because it seems that Icardi, he can create something out of nothing in the box, and it's a rare talent. So we'll have to see how this plays out.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned Rayola, and, you know, I've kind of made this point before. I think, you know, for a while, I think she was criticized because she's a woman, she's a female personality. I didn't see that big of a difference from something that Rayola would do. But as you mentioned, she really did cross a line with the locker room and talking about the teammates. And that's something that is bombastic, and Rayola will use almost anything for leverage. It never crossed that line. So I think you put it very well there. Let's talk a little bit about Milan. And I want to ask you about Gattuso. I have to say, I've been very fascinated by him. I think people who listen to the podcast know that I've defended him. I didn't expect him to do a good job in Milan when he was hired. I thought he wasn't going to last long, but he's impressed me, and I think he's navigated through really a lot of challenges. So let me ask you, someone who followed Gattuso's career as a player, have seen everything, what he's done as Milan's manager, what has stood out to you about Gattuso, and do you think he's the right guy for the foreseeable future for Milan as the manager?
David, Vino made a quote several years ago, and I still remember it. He was talking when he was at Sion, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, in Switzerland, where he's player manager, that he felt he had the right amount of grinta, I'll use the word in Italian, to do the job as a manager, but that he'd be presumptuous to think that he was ready or to dream to be on a bench of a team where he won everything as a player, that he had to put his time in to rise up the ranks. And I think putting in his time was important, because we saw what happened with two other Milan legends in recent times, people in Zaghi and Clarence Seedorf, respectively, when they were rushed into the job. I mean, Reno paid his dues at Sion, Palermo, Crete, Pisa, and lastly in the Milan youth sector. Obviously, as a player, he punched well above his weight to defy what might be a limited technical skill base, to become a world champion both at club and national team level. I think, David, what he brings is that old-style Milan grinta and DNA. I mean, Optopolo had a stat yesterday, which I wasn't aware of, and if I recall correctly, he said that Milan has the youngest starting 11 among the European top leagues at 24 years and, let's see, 88 days. And it seems that this young team's embracing the message and wants to play for Reno. And I think that's the key for any manager, especially one in his first high-profile appointment at an important club such as his. I think, and it seems that a lot of the players, they address him as Reno, which, as we know, David, usually in Italian football, it's usually mister, even if they've known him for a while. I mean, I remember Maldini, Paolo Maldini, would refer to Carlo Ancelotti as il mister, you know, the coach, not Carletto, as he's affectionately known. But in terms of the team, I think that defensively improved a great deal with the young players such as Calabria and Romagnoli, and of course, obviously Donnarumma. All the three are going to, I think, be Azzurri stalwarts in the future. And with the addition of Piontek up top, who's basically, he's come in and he's been replicating his form at Genoa, and he seems seamless. And of course, with Cutrone, another option, I think they're looking pretty good. You know, Dave, the interesting thing about Reno is who he played for, Ancelotti and Lippi. And especially with Lippi, it seems that team in 2006, probably 8 or 9 of them have gone on to become coaches.
Yeah.
And it's really intriguing to me. And I think Allegri also had a little bit of influence on Reno. But going forward, David, obviously delivering a Champions League berth is important. They're still in the running with Coppa Italia, and they could win that trophy. I think, yeah, obviously, he should be in the mix. And the new management group, the Allianz Fund, I think they bring a different mentality, similar to Mr. Pallotta at Roma, an American sporting mentality, more bottom line oriented. But David, I think they also made very interesting choices quickly. They brought back, yeah, a club legend such as Paolo Maldini. Because since his retirement, we really haven't seen him much at the ground in Milan's world, so to speak. And I think, yeah, you know, that's an important step, especially from a group that doesn't, let's say, they're not as well versed in culture, but they understood the importance of bringing him back and obviously giving Gattuso the chance. I mean, in many ways, it's similar to Roma with Totti. Yeah. An iconic player. And he wanted to go forward in the front office, and they gave him a job, but he's not sitting on a couch. He has a lot to say and do. And especially this year with the change in ownership, with change in managers, and then with the departure of Mr. Monchi. I know you've had John Solano, who does excellent work covering Roma, discussing these things. But again, Mr. Pallotta and the ownership at Roma understood the necessity of having a club legend and giving him a strong vision to do things. And as we've seen Totti basically become the face of the team in public, giving interviews and things of that nature, which I think is important.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting with Maldini, because I see it more as Maldini coming back as a testament of how serious the Elliott Fund is and how competent they are, because he had been offered a job with the Chinese owners. I think Maldini was smart enough to know he didn't want to be involved with that. And we've also seen it with Raiola himself, who now with Donnarumma is all about, you know, making a new contract with Milan. He was very skeptical before, but now I think everyone's seeing Milan as finally being run properly, which had been a while, I would say, since Thiago Silva and Ibrahimovic left, when Berlusconi either lost interest or was told he couldn't spend money on it. So definitely well on their way. So I want to ask you about some of the work you've done. And I think everyone that's listened to the interview so far, you know, understands how thorough and how knowledgeable and what a unique perspective you bring to these topics. So I always enjoy reading your book reviews, because you also kind of add some background and really make the experience of reading the book even more interesting. So some of your recent ones, there's a review of Ibrahimovic's book, I Am Football. Ibra never lacks fake modesty with these things. So let me ask you, what was the main thing that you learned? Because I feel like Ibrahimovic, we've read a lot, you know, he's been in the public figure for a very long time, covered a lot. But I get the sense that this book taught you a few new things. So what stood out to you?
Well, the book was co-written by Mats Olsson. He's a Swedish journalist who's based in New York City, who apparently has known Zlatan from the beginning of his career. And it's a physically imposing book. It's quite heavy. It's with beautiful photographs that illustrate the many stops of his long career. I guess, David, what stood out was that, you know, we often see Zlatan portrayed in the media as a prima donna who makes everything about himself and, you know, dare to Zlatan as a hashtag, et cetera. And the one thing that was salient to me after reading the book was how highly former teammates and rivals rated his intelligence, dedication to his craft, and his professionalism. For example, Thierry Henry said that people forget how smart he is and that Zlatan's a master of every detail. And Andrea Pirlo called him exemplary professional. And one of his former managers, Jose Mourinho, said he knows everything that's worth knowing. I mean, to me, David, he's a winner with a capital W and a rare sense of self-confidence. And 33 trophies are a testament to that. And as Massimo Moratti said, his president of Internazionale many years ago, he's the ultimate professional. He doesn't allow personal feelings to interfere with his professional decisions. So it was a great read, and I was pleased to be able to review it.
Excellent. Excellent. So now let's talk about your most recent project. And, you know, this is when I found out you were back on Twitter, and I was very excited to see you hop back on. So you wrote about a book written by a famous Italian journalist called Riccardo Pratesi. Those of our listeners based in Italy, I'm sure, are familiar with him because he covered both Juve, the Italian national team, for Gazzetta dello Sport for multiple years, and now has spent time in the United States as a reporter for both Gazzetta and Sky Sport. And he has a passion for the NBA, and he wrote a book called 30 su 30. So tell our listeners a little bit what the book is about and what made you want to cover this.
Well, thank you, David, for allowing me to discuss again for the great introduction you gave to Riccardo's work. And obviously, he's a top-tier journalist, and I've always enjoyed his work for many years. And he's liked American sports, and he decided to come to the NBA, the U.S., to cover the NBA and NCAA college basketball, and to a lesser extent, the NFL and college gridiron football. He's covered 226 NBA games live, 32 NFL games, two Super Bowls, and a few NBA finals. And he initially went to San Antonio, Texas for a year, and then the Bay Area of California to cover the Warriors and others and Sacramento. And then he followed up last year in Minneapolis before returning home. And actually, he was just here this past week to cover March Madness and a few games in Florida with Orlando and Miami, respectively. But this book, David, it kind of chronicles an atypical immigrant's tale of an acclaimed journalist who decided to come here, took a risk somewhat, given, like you said, he had big beats with Juventus, he had Zuri for many years, but he's always liked American sport, especially NBA, which is pretty popular in Italy. But he came here because he wanted to cover things from the ground. He wanted to see America and learn about Americans. And it's just, it's a great read, David, because it's just, it's also an excellent look at Americans, at the U.S. as a country in terms of how we are as a people, you know, the excellent travel work. But it also, it paints a great picture of what it's like to be a beat reporter, covering, in this case, the NBA. And as I said, you know, in my opinion, it was a journalistic slam dunk. I really enjoyed reading it. And as I said, I've enjoyed his work for many years.
Very well said. I look forward to actually reading the book after I read your review. So, Steve, I can tell you on a personal note, it's great to have you back in general. But anyone who, you know, wants to, you know, learn about sports, about writing, about covering things with knowledge and class, I mean, they would have a very hard time finding a better example than you. So I'm thrilled to have welcomed you back to Calcioland, and I certainly look forward to having you on again very soon. So thanks so much for joining me this evening.
David, I greatly appreciate your kind consideration. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and also you've done great work, and I'm proud of what you've achieved.
Thank you. That means a lot to me, Steve. So thanks again, and I'm going to talk to you real soon. That's the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to everyone who sent in a question. As you guys know, we record a lot of these. So if you have another question on Serie A, transfers, TV, music, film, please send it in using the Calcioland hashtag. And if you enjoyed the show, this is a free show available to all. Please leave us a review on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. If you leave a comment, Alex and I read them all. And these testimonials are great because they are from our listeners. They help us attract a bigger audience. And if you like all the content on the Calcioland podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. We have various tiers for you just to listen enhanced version of the podcast. We have a tier where you can read a lot of original blogs from me. We'll have Alex once in a while do a video, and I answer a lot of questions there. I think that'll be a lot of fun year-round, and especially during the transfer window. So thank you very much for the support, and we look forward to chatting with you in the next few days.